Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. Take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Coming in at number 7 on our top 10 countdown. Up next, Gibson Guitar Raid, Fast and Furious, AP Phone Hack, HHS Bypassing Congressional Appropriations, IRS Thuggery, and Benghazi. Good evening. You are live with Tex and Rex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City and home to one of over 100,000 IRS offices nationwide.
And this is Tex, also broadcasting to you from the Imperial City. I'm outside the 8th circle of hell, I think, a little bit closer in. But we certainly can see the eye up there, streaking, searching, a little searchlight going on there. But welcome, everyone, and this week is Scandal Week in Washington, and boy, are they coming a cropper this week. So, Rex, what do we got going on?
Well, we've got scandalous cover-ups and squishy reactions, and it's all sorts of chaos. As always, the important thing is not so much what they're doing, but what they're not letting you know that they're doing. And while they got you focused on the scandals, which are all certainly very important and need to be addressed, we got to keep an eye on what else they are up to, because there's a lot of shenanigans going on. But one thing I would say, as these scandals keep coming faster and furiouser, pun intended, we can't forget that these things are an absolute sign of desperation. Progressivism is collapsing under its own weight. That might be the actual intention of progressivism in the first place. And there's a lot going on. You got to make sure that as we discuss these scandals, we don't forget about things like, oh, I don't know, the immigration bill that might flood our country with people who don't want to be Americans but want to leech off the system. We've got, elections coming up in 2014, and the first battle just started with the Virginia Republican Convention. Virginia has elections, and so does New Jersey, in odd years. So 2013 will be kind of the barometer of where we're going in 2014. So, you know, there's a lot to discuss here, Tex. The three primary scandals appear to be the, you know, IRS targeting certain groups, pro-life, Tea Party, Constitution, you know, all sorts of crazy stuff like that. And then, of course, we've got the AP phone hack, which seems to have pissed off some on the left, finally. And as always, there's Benghazi. Can't forget about that one, because that is, I think, a pretty serious indictment on the attitude that this administration and the federal government in general has towards national security. It seems to be assisting those that we have problems with as our enemies, chiefly Muslim jihadists, while setting up a police state at home and weakening our military capacity abroad. I think it's disgusting, and I think that people need to answer for this, and the Republicans need to do more than just use it as a jockeying tool for electoral politics, because this is serious stuff.
Well,
your thoughts?
Exactly. And I think, you know, by my count, there's at least 5 scandals going on, although people's count seems to differ. So you have the the AP scandal. You've got the IRS scandal. You have Benghazi. You have Fast and Furious. And you have the Catherine Sebelius, like, hey, Congress won't fund our program, but you, as industry, you better contribute to our group that's, you know, going to help fund this thing. So that's 5 scandals.
At least.
And, at least. And who have you got tied up in this? Department of Justice, Department of Defense, the State Department, the Internal Revenue Service, Health and Human Services, and the White House, putting out 5 major fires at one time. You can't govern that way. Too many senior people, too many senior departments are caught up in scandals and trying to protect themselves from scandals. And really, I kind of think that this is going to signal the end of Obamacare, because you have HHS tied up in trying to fund it through what appear to be illegal means. And, you know, I don't know exactly what's going on there yet, because the investigation hasn't been done, but it certainly seems to be illegal means.
You can't bypass Congress for appropriations. I mean,
exactly.
What the hell is this woman thinking?
Yeah. And then the other thing is you're tying up the IRS, right, which is supposed to be collecting the taxes for this, and the person who's supposed to be collecting the Obamacare taxes is the person who was in charge of the division that was investigating people for, you know, basically nonconformist political beliefs with
that's
the way
that constipated
the Obama
libtard that looks. It's that constipated libtard that looks like Dana Carvey's church lady, right?
Yes, exactly. And so you have Obamacare undone. The IRS is under scrutiny, and Health and Human Services is under scrutiny. You basically have debilitated the bureaucracy. And how do you unwind 5 major scandals like Reagan dealt with around Contra? I've always said this about second terms of president. Second term is never worth it, because the second term is always about the investigation of the first term. So you don't want a second term. But he got one, and now he's got 5 investigations. I mean, you're playing whack-a-mole. It basically, the government is sort of debilitated. It's not going to be able to do anything for the next 4 years, really, which, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing, considering that I don't really like what happened the first 4 years either. But, you know, this is now the prime on the radar thing. And they had cover. I mean, how did the Obama administration get away with all this stuff for so long? Well, the press was always fawning and adoring on Obama, and now they've screwed with the press, and so they've lost their shield. And
to some degree, they're starting to rally around him again. There was this one douchebag, Dan or Dave or whatever the hell his name is, Pfeiffer, whatever, some kind of pufta name, was out doing the apologetic round. So they are starting to rally the wagons, but at first they were a little surprised that, you know, their prized dictator turned on them.
Yeah, well, Wolf Blitzer was out there saying that, well, if there's a legitimate national security reason and all this kind of stuff, and the media was like, no, Wolf, don't say that. But still, they're upset about it. Now, you know, in public they may rally around and defend him and everything, but believe me, behind the scenes they're really upset about this. And, you know, they certainly don't want to see this type of thing happening in the future, and if they don't get their way, believe me, they're going to be all over them. So that's kind of their cudgel that they'll use in order to, you know, get what they want out of the Obama administration. So I don't know. I think they've really overstepped their bounds here. And the misuse of the IRS, you know, I think that resonates with a lot of people because it's an agency that people understand. I mean, it's kind of been covered endlessly. But the important thing about it, and one of the more disappointing things about it, I think, is that the Republican Party, or very few members of it, and I mean very, very, very few, are using this to say, hey, see, this is why the IRS shouldn't exist at all. Because if you have an Internal Revenue Service, it allows you to get too involved into the personal life of citizens, right? If you know where everyone's income comes from and how much they're making and can oversee that and send them a tax bill, it's way too fucking intrusive in people's lives. And it never was intended to be that way. It shouldn't exist. This is not something the government should do. You should replace it with another system. And nobody is really making that case that, hey, this points out the inherent flaw in the IRS from day one when this stupid thing was created.
There's one guy down from your way who's making the case, and Ted Cruz has called for abolishing the IRS. And I think that, obviously, the Rhino leadership doesn't want to give up this value. Yeah, well, of course. The Rhino leadership doesn't want to give up this valuable tool because they expect that they can use these scandals to, you know, show themselves as you know, stalwart conservatives, and they're for the Tea Party and blah, 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 you know, and get another 2012 out of the conservative electorate. And then go in there and govern like rhinos and progressives and douchebags as they usually do. And, of course, they want the power of the IRS because, let's face it, Republicans are totally cool with using the IRS to intimidate people as long as they're the ones getting to do the intimidation. So the problem is it's not that it's, you know, Obama doing this or Bush had done it before or Clinton did it before that or Nixon did it. The problem is, as you said, this thing should not exist. It is a tool of tyranny. And it should not exist. I mean, think about it. You said they force you to report your income. Well, they not only force you to report your income, you have to report your investments. You have to report your deductions. You have to report your donations. You have to report, you know, it is an absolute total intrusion into your life, and it is a very powerful bullying tool of tyranny. And our founding fathers never allowed for a direct tax for this very reason. It's been going on for 100 years, which means hardly anybody alive in this country today remembers what these United States were like before the income tax. And the Republicans, instead of actually saying, hey, you know what, this is revealing to people how terrible this thing is, let's shit can the whole thing. No, they're talking about let's use it as a political ploy, other than, you know, Ted Cruz and Rand Paul perhaps. So, you know, this is the time to put pressure on them to say, we don't want this thing. This thing is dangerous. And, of course, you get people say, oh, who's going to build the roads if we don't have taxes? I hate to tell you this, but not a single income tax dollar has ever built one friggin' road in this country. Roads are built by debt, chiefly bonds, which are serviced by future revenues. Well, that's why we need income tax, so we can tax people in the future to pay for those bonds. Well, find another way, because when you're taxing people directly, you're intruding in their lives and this kind of thing, you know, you can say it's all about Obama. You can hate Obama. You can call Obama a Muslim. I really don't care. I think Obama's just a mildly incompetent loser who's the current puppet in chief. But the fact is this tool is dangerous. And what we've seen in these hearings is the disdain that these lifer bureaucrats that run these friggin' tools of tyranny have for Congress, which is supposed to be your voice over the bureaucracy. And then next they started floating this crap that, well, it's not that we're being malicious or tyrannical, it's merely that the government is too big and we're incompetent. Well, incompetence is not an excuse, and the government being too big, that's not an excuse either. Shrink it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the other argument for smaller, more limited government. They're making the argument, well, it's so big, it's so complicated. I mean, you can't possibly expect anyone to know. Okay, well, then let's start cutting budgets and reducing it. It's too big, it's too complicated, and you can't do it. I mean, that's the other thing. You have these people going up, testifying, because this has become the smart Washington thing to do, is to say, well, I just don't know. I just don't know. I just don't know. I don't know. I don't know who did that. I don't know who approved that. I don't know what's going on. I mean, I don't know anything, right? That's the smart thing to do. Well, now you have how many agencies are going up there saying they don't know? Who the fuck knows? Who knows anything? Does anybody know anything that's going on? Does anybody want to stand up and say they know anything? No.
I think we should have a law that says if you don't know what your agency's up to, we should defund it and close it down right away. That should just be a standing law. If you come before Congress and we ask you something about your agency and you say, I don't know, that's it. You're fired. Door shut. Everybody's gone. And no more funding.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. So you don't know. Okay, great. So you're gone. You're out of office now. And you have to testify about what happened while you went there. But you're out. That's it. Obama, you got to pick someone else now that we're going to confirm. But this guy or this lady, they don't know what they're doing, and they just admitted it, so they're out of here, right? Now we got to figure out what's going on. I mean,
the problem is Obama says he doesn't know what he's doing.
Nobody knows anything, but give us more money, and we're raising taxes, and we're going to run health care.
Right. Does it even really matter at this point, Tech? Does it even really matter that we don't know what's going on?
Yeah.
All right, folks. Call-in number is 646-649-1013. We're going to be talking about scandals, squishy responses, and how this tyrannical government is just completely off its rails. It's not the time to be afraid. It's not the time to freak out. This is the time to go full court press because this thing is coming off the wheels, and it's time to take it apart and bring the power back down to where it belongs, your state and you as an individual in your community. Tex, we got our first two callers in. Would you like me to bring them on, or you got something to rant about?
Bring them on. We can rant together.
Sounds like a plan. First caller is... And we've also got someone who was spending most of his Saturday in Richmond, Virginia at the Republican Party convention, and apparently also somebody who has been involved in organizations that were targeted by the Infernal Redundancy Service. Matthew Hurt, you have joined Tex, Rex, and Captain Caveman. Welcome.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're
good.
Fired up.
Welcome aboard.
Well, it's been an interesting few weeks. You guys actually missed, I believe, another scandal is the Pigford scandal, which was a class action lawsuit that basically the federal government started doling out $50,000 settlements to people who claimed to be farmers. These were minority groups, black, Asian, and other folks who claimed to be farmers who were in some way wronged by the government. The New York Times, actually, this is a story that broke that Andrew Breitbart actually was working on before he died, and the media totally ignored it. And now here we are more than a year later. The New York Times was out with a piece a couple of weeks ago that basically vindicated Breitbart and said that absolutely this program was rife with fraud. Folks were filing false claims and taking their $50,000 and running with it.
Yeah, well, there isn't a government program that isn't rife with fraud, because as soon as you start pilfering, you're going to attract the corrupt, which is precisely why these things should not exist. And under the Constitution, they don't. Captain Caveman, your mic is live, so you're on with Matthew Hurt, Tex, and Rex as well.
Gentlemen, how are we doing tonight?
Excellent.
We're fired up.
Ready,
but you know, there's some good
news. Yeah, I just find this whole thing, you know, I was thinking about as I was listening to your open monologue or dialogue there, you know, going through the group and looking at all the articles, and, you know, I've had to categorize all these different scandals out and just trying to keep, a little bit of organization in the insanity. Otherwise, people would post 500 articles and, you know, the important one would get pushed off the page. But, you know, looking at this stuff and just going, wow, I just hope. You know, and you made a very important point, Rex, and that is that the rhinos, you know, they don't care. I mean, they just want the power back. You know, they want control of the weapons. They want control of the, you know, fractional reserve money, and they just want to get in power. And then there's a handful of people, you know, Rand and Cruz and Lee and Amash and the rest of them that actually went to government to govern, you know, who are still on the same talk. But I think that the important part of this is can it be marketed well? Will this produce success in 2014? Because, you know, the corruption, you know, when this is all said and done, we don't know how this is going to spin out, how many people get moved around and how many people don't get fired and how many people don't go to jail. You know, that's all the big questions. But, you know, the deeper thing is this, will this create a movement in this country where people go, wow, okay, well, we didn't like what Bush did, so we voted for Hope and Change, and we sure as hell don't like what Hope and Change is, because that's really bad, too. You know, can we come back to the voice, of reason, which really,
sure,
even though the Tea Party has been demonized. That voice was smaller government, get out of my life, quit ripping me off, quit giving me, anal pain, you know what I'm saying? And let me live my life and be prosperous in the greatest country that's ever existed in the history of the world. That's
well, Chris, you're right. You're right. And the thing about Tea Party is that it hasn't gone anywhere. It was co-opted, but remember that the Tea Party was a spontaneous movement of Americans who were just fed up with out-of-bounds constitutional government. Initially, they tried to paint Tea Party people as anti-government. Okay, those are anarchists. Tea Party people generally are not anti-government. We're anti-corrupt, unconstitutional government. But, you know, it was obviously co-opted by the Republicans. They rode in on, 2010 with it, and then they flipped on the Tea Party. And let's keep in mind, some of this IRS stuff, some of these people were appointed by George Bush. So I suspect that some of the rhinos were not too displeased that the Tea Party was being hassled by the IRS because they wanted them to count. But the Tea Party movement is still there because people still believe in the Constitution. They believe in liberty. They believe in being part of the process. And, maybe there's some confusion over, appropriations and, who's really Tea Party. Guys like Rubio rode the Tea Party wave. He's not really Tea Party. But the opening salvo of the election you're talking about really happened this weekend. And Matthew was there in Richmond at the Republican Party convention. We held a convention as opposed to a primary. So a bigger voice to the grassroots, and in fact, that's why the current lieutenant governor of Virginia, who helped Bob Billions McDonald give us a $7 billion tax hike that's allegedly going to create jobs, had to pull out because without a primary, the rhino had no chance. So we got the Tea Party guy, and Matthew, I'm going to throw it to you. Can you tell us, did any of these scandals come up, or Tea Party, or anything like that come up at the Richmond convention? Because I know that we elected or nominated a very conservative Republican slate.
Well, could I take it one step back and say why have a convention instead of a primary? What was the thinking behind that, and how did that happen?
Sure, yes.
Matthew, this is the Tex and Rex show. Go with it any way you want.
The background here for those who aren't familiar with Virginia politics or what has happened in the last cycle is Bill Bowling, who's the lieutenant governor, wanted a primary, and the state central committee for the Republican Party selects whether or not we have a primary or a convention. And a number of years ago, a couple of years ago, the state central committee was packed with establishment types, bowling people, old holdovers from former establishment senators and governors, and so they voted for a primary, which in Virginia we have, there's no party registration, so you just go in on primary day and you declare whichever ballot you want. Many more people cast ballots. Many more people who aren't as active within the party go out and cast ballots. And so it allows for more moderates to get involved and more establishment types. And then they end up selecting a moderate candidate. We saw it in the presidential primary last year where Mitt Romney sort of shrugged off all the conservative alternatives and made it through. And so the State Central Committee voted a year early to make it a primary. And then the State Central Committee members turned over. Many of them were replaced by conservatives, by Ron Paul types, by allies of Ken Cuccinelli, who has always favored a convention. And then they revoted and selected a convention, and we had that on Saturday. And it was really fascinating. The governor's race was, of course, uncontested. Bill Bowling withdrew, and Ken Cuccinelli received the nomination. I think that the attorney general's race was very close. They didn't announce the vote total for that race, but Delegate Rob Bell from the Charlottesville area, I believe, stepped up. He was a candidate for attorney general, and after all the votes had been cast and counted, he moved to suspend the rules to nominate Mark Obenchain by acclamation. I thought that was a very classy thing for Rob Bell to do. They're both very solid on many of the same issues, both great candidates. They ran on their own record rather than attacking the other candidates, which isn't, what happened in the lieutenant governor's race. And so I think we Virginia Republicans and all Virginians won in that attorney general race, and we would have won either way. You know, Rob Bell's a great candidate. Mark Obenchain's a great candidate. They're both doing great things, and I'm excited. I was a Mark Obenchain supporter for a long time and was excited that the turnout, the result was what it was. The lieutenant governor's race, however, did not go how I wanted it to. E.W. Jackson, he's a minister. He's been a candidate before, and he is wildly popular with folks on the ground, grassroots activists. And I definitely credit his success to that grassroots ability to organize and mobilize enough people to the convention. And, you know, there were four ballots, and he was ahead in every single one of them. 31% the first round, 37% the second round, 49.7% the third round. And then finally, I believe it ended up the last ballot, which was him against Pete Snyder. It ended up being, I think, 58% to 42%. But he definitely had the momentum. The speech he gave was riveting, and you could see the support grow throughout the hours-long process that was the convention.
Excellent. So it maybe didn't go the way that you wanted, but obviously, you know, grassroots made their statement. I mean, you had, what, something like 8,100 delegates at the convention?
Yeah, I believe there were 13,000 registered, and I believe somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000 showed up to cast ballots. So, yeah, it was great, and this is a fantastic way to get people. You know, not only does it allow the party to select the nominees for office, but it invigorates the grassroots in a way that primaries do not, and it allows you as a candidate to do more with fewer resources. So that you do get candidates like E.W. Jackson who are viable and who become the nominee. I supported Susan Simpson. It was sort of a foregone conclusion within the circles of folks who I affiliate with that she was the quote-unquote liberty candidate. She had a strong showing on the first ballot. She actually came in second place and then dropped after the second round of balloting. And it went from, you know, the last three folks were Corey Stewart, Pete Snyder, and E.W. Jackson. And there was a scandal, you know, talking about scandals on tonight's show. Apparently, from what I understand, once Corey Stewart dropped off and it was just E.W. Jackson and Pete Snyder, you know, when you're campaigning, you make plans for future events to happen. And from what I understand, Snyder's campaign had printed up flyers of a number of people who were candidates who had endorsed or who would potentially endorse in the future after they dropped out. And from what I understand, a campaign staffer jumped the gun and passed out endorsement flyers from both Corey Stewart and from Mark Obenchain, and neither of those were actually true. Neither candidate endorsed Pete Snyder, and there was a backlash toward the end. You know, Corey Stewart staffers were running through the Coliseum with Jackson signs, shouting, "Pete Snyder lied. He, you know, we haven't endorsed Pete Snyder," and in fact, Corey Stewart went on to the convention floor with E.W. Jackson and grabbed him and said, "This is the guy I support."
Wow. So what you're saying is that there was a potential shenanigan there, the kind of stuff that the what Pat Caddell calls the CLEC, the consultant lobbyist establishment complex of running the Republican Party nationally. Something like that was attempted, but because it's a convention and not a primary, not being done in the media and all that kind of stuff, people were there on the ground. It was self-correcting.
I believe so, and I think I'm having a conversation with Pete tomorrow to sort of hammer out the finer points. But what I think was, you know, they were planning for an opportunity to pick up endorsements after the first and second ballot, and someone jumped the gun. There's the story on Politico today. You know, the Snyder campaign gave a brief comment, you know, it was an accident, we didn't mean to, but it sort of, the apology wasn't sufficient to the extent that the act was actually incredibly egregious. You know, people were, I know Corey Stewart staffers who were passing out this flyer who said, "Well, now people think I'm a liar because I was wearing a Corey Stewart shirt and I was passing this out and it wasn't true." I thought after the second ballot, though, that there was no way, the way the winds were blowing, that Jackson was most likely going to be the nominee.
Interesting. So basically this Virginia convention, which is really kind of, you know, the first major stop off in the 2013-2014 midterms, even though this is a state convention, it's kind of a barometer of where things are going. Remember that Obama won Virginia by large margins back in 2008, and then Bob McDonnell, who at the time snowed most of us into thinking that he's an actual conservative, won by a large margin, people repudiating the Obama hope and change movement. But this convention seems to sort of be the anti-Tampa, right? This was about the grassroots, right? This was about having a real competition between delegates running or candidates running on their own merits. This is completely opposite of what we saw last year in Tampa.
Sure, sure. And I was a delegate in Tampa and was part of the movement with Virginia's National Committeeman Morton Blackwell and trying to, you know, expand the Republican Party from the grassroots up. Actually went to Los Angeles several weeks ago with Morton for the spring RNC meeting, where we attempted to reverse those rules, were unsuccessful. We're continuing on that front. But the goal is, in the long run, to bring more activists into the Republican Party, more conservative activists, more Ron Paul types, more Tea Party types, and build a broad coalition of people who can move forward and elect principled individuals who will say they're against tax increases and vote against tax increases, who will say they're against big government and who will vote against big government. So, yeah, I think ultimately this was sort of a repudiation of Tampa and of what the national party is doing.
Well, it seems to me that this was more of a way to go, which is to get people involved in the convention process, because the convention is an event, but it's a party event. And the people who go are essentially party activists who want to be involved and who care about the success of the organization. The problem with the primary system is that, you know, people sort of sit at home, don't do anything but yell at their TVs or complain to their friends at the bar, and then they show up and they vote. And then they go
American
home
Idol.
And watch the results on – yeah, they go home, they watch the results on TV, but they haven't really participated. It's sort of the de minimis level of participation in the political process. But if we go back to where the conventions actually have more of a meaning and more of a purpose – then that means what happens at your local party event matters more, because you're selecting people to go to the state event and then to go on to the national event, and there's more of a participatory system. Now, any sort of system of power or picking people in power eventually gets corrupted once sort of that system is known. And, you know, there was a period of time where the convention system in the 20th century, early part of the 20th century, became corrupted, and so we went to a primary system. Well, now the primary system seems like it's been completely corrupted by the media, and the media is vetting who can and cannot run and who's a legitimate and not a legitimate candidate, rather than the people who care about the party itself. So I think we should go back to more of a convention system where the party activists get involved and use that for several election cycles, before eventually, I would imagine, like anything else, it gets corrupted, and then we move on to something else. But I think the convention process right now is really what the Republican Party needs, to find the people who care about the organization, want to see it succeed, infuse new ideas into it, and infuse a new enthusiasm in the party. You're just not going to get that with a bunch of, faceless zombies showing up and punching a ballot in a primary.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that a primary is a very passive experience. You do just go to the polls, vote. This is something where the candidate has to be able to organize. The people have to be passionate enough to spend a couple of $100 to go to Richmond or wherever the convention is held and to sit. You know, the convention gaveled in at 10:20 in the morning yesterday and wasn't through until after 9:00. So it was it went late into the night. I ended up staying an additional night in Richmond that I wasn't expecting to stay, and it was a really great experience. And I've been involved. I've been in Virginia now since 2009, moved in the middle of the year in 2009, but I've been involved in two state conventions, the one last year and the one yesterday, and it's a fantastic process. People are fired up. People are passionate. If your candidate doesn't win on the first ballot, you have to you're wrestling with yourself to find another candidate, and you're talking to friends and neighbors and other members of your unit, the folks who live in your community, to try to come up with your next candidate. It's a great experience, and it's very a very hands-on, very active experience at convention.
Well, that's how the process should be. Unfortunately, with most of the country falling into affluence, apathy, and plunder through the government, they're more interested in American Idol and dancing with the douchebags than the political process, hence why Texas' point about conventions being the way to eliminate the passivity and the corruption is very valid. I mean, the one thing we know about the world that we live in is that there's uncertainty and change, and therefore what worked 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago won't necessarily work. That doesn't mean principles change. It just means processes need to be changed in order to deal with what is always ever-present, and our founding fathers identified it from the get-go. Human beings are inherently corrupt, and when there's power involved, they tend to become more corrupt, which is why liberty requires perpetual vigilance. And I think moving to a convention system and then the RNC meeting coming up in Chicago is going to be very important to correct these egregious rules on the national level is very important. You know, the topic is scandals, and let's face it, the Republican Party is not free of scandals. Tampa was a scandal. You know, right now we're focusing on the Obama administration scandals, but Tampa was a scandal. And frankly, John Boehner saying, I don't care who's going to be fired. I want to know who's going to jail. You know, you can have that bold rhetoric, but the guy is such a pussy, he's not going to actually do anything about it, and that's the problem. That's the corruption inherent in the rhino cleck right now that needs to be rooted out, and this convention was a great example of that. Matthew, real quick, I'm going to throw it to Chris to see if he has any comments about this, because I know that he's really focused on the 2014 elections, and I believe that this is the first battle towards that, and then I'd like to move on to scandals and other things. So, Chris, you want to address anything with Matthew before we move on?
Yeah, you know, I'm really curious is do you see this, Matthew, as a turnaround from what happened in Virginia with how they manipulated Newt off the ballot and some of those situations that happened? Do you see this as a turnaround that will level the playing field and be more productive going into, well, you guys are 2013, but, you know, into the whole 2014 election cycle and give back some passion to the grassroots and belief that they can accomplish something?
Well, you said manipulated Newt off the ballot. You're talking about the presidential primary last year?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my understanding about that process was Newt and Rick Perry and others didn't acquire the necessary signatures to be on the ballot. And so to an extent, that takes an organization as well. It's not just what we saw yesterday with E.W. Jackson. It's being able to get the requisite number of signatures. Mitt Romney was able to get the signatures. Ron Paul was able to get the signatures. I don't understand. You know, my candidate was on the ballot last year in the Republican primary. Mm-hmm. I supported Ron Paul, and so I don't understand. You know, there are a set of rules. Having gone to Tampa and having been part of a movement,
the rules
that
changed though.
Well, having the rules for appearing on the ballot in the March presidential primary last year did not change in the middle of the game like they did in Tampa when we played by the rules and they kept moving the goalposts. So I would say that that's a little bit different, but definitely I think what we're seeing, particularly in Virginia, is a return to the grassroots of that power, and it's we have a great top of the ticket. Ken Cuccinelli is not your establishment Republican. He opposes corporatism and special interests, and in fact, in the conversations that went on before Bill Bowling made his final decision, Northern Virginia Republican businessmen wanted Bill to run because if Ken were to get elected, that gravy train would stop. And in fact, Ken's most recent ad talks about eliminating those special interest loopholes and returning tax relief to the individuals who make the economy go, middle class families and those types. So I think we've got a star example at the top of our ticket of what grassroots leadership looks like, and hopefully what we'll see is, particularly in the wake of all these scandals, is the healthy distrust people have in government will translate into
giving the reins of power to someone who has a track record of pushing back against those special interests.
Did you see the RNC in there trying to subvert this, or did they stay out of this and let it happen?
There were RNC folks on the ground in Richmond, but I don't know how involved they were in the process. Like I said, at the third ballot, I told the folks I was with, it's Jackson's support is insurmountable. And having garnered 49.7%, you know, that's a couple dozen votes away from an outright majority on the third ballot. He was going to win. He gained all the momentum, and it was interesting to see the excitement and enthusiasm for him on the convention floor. I didn't see much from the RNC proper, but I do know that, you know, some of their staffers live in Virginia, and they were delegates, and they had a few folks on the ground. I don't know to what extent they were involved.
Mm. Yeah, the thing is that, you know, Ken is definitely a grassroots guy, which I think is a very good move for Virginia to kind of lead the charge moving into, you know, where the conservatives within the Republican Party are going to be in 2014. But regarding what happened with the ballots last year, a couple of things. One, it is true that the rules were not manipulated, but the rules were highly in favor of establishment candidates. Now, the fact that Ron Paul was on the ballot was testimony to Ron Paul's advanced ground game, which obviously fell apart in Tampa as they kept on moving the goalposts. But some of the ridiculous rules were that many of the signatures collected, at least as far as I know for a fact, with the Gingrich campaign, were invalidated, not because they were invalid signatures, but some of them were invalidated because some of the people collecting the signatures were from out of state. Well, that's a little ridiculous. I can understand why you would not want people from out of state signing the ballot, but collecting the signatures, that's ridiculous. But since then, the Virginia legislature has reduced the required signatures from 10,000 to 5,000, opening up Virginia a little bit more for grassroots,
really?
and giving access for, you know, 2016 to the Commonwealth for more candidates. So that's very good. That'll be good for someone like Rand Paul or Ted Cruz if they choose to run. So, you know, the thing is that what people have to realize is all the problems we have with the RNC, that's a private organization that you got to tear apart by going to those winter and spring meetings and getting, you know, things done. But the electoral rules, which are controlled by the Democrats and the Republicans, they control every precinct in the country, and it is a duopoly. But those are state laws, state rules, and so you have to put pressure on your state legislatures to change the ballot access requirements and change the voting rules, especially these damn electronic machines that we don't even know if they're actually accurate. You just saw how chaotic it was in the Philippines with their election with the electronic machines. So you have to work on that by putting pressure on your state legislatures, and that's why things like paying attention to what's going on in Virginia in 2013 is very important, because ultimately what's going to happen at the national level is dictated by what the states do or do not do. If the electorate and the states are passive, this is a top-down duopoly bureaucracy. If the states and the people are active, the federal government is beholden to us. We always have to remember that the federal government is a creature of the states, not the other way around. Things are being run right now as if the federal government is in charge of everything and we just bow to their will. You've got to stop having that subservient serf mentality and, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps and get busy, like what Matthew did at the convention this Saturday. So it's very important to do these things, and I think that this is testimony to the fact that the majority of people in this country are conservative, if you understand what conservatism means, which means that you want to conserve the liberal principles that are codified in the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution.
Well,
but the Constitution
absolutely.
Is not self-enforcing.
I support what you're saying, Rex. You know, reinvigorating the state parties vis-a-vis the national party, one of the important things to that is to reinvigorate the convention process and have people start participating, because the way you rebuild the state parties and rebuild them as important consequential organizations is to have conventions that actually have consequential discussions that are not just, you know, everybody goes and votes aye and they all go home. You know, where they rubber stamp everything. If it actually matters what happens at the state conventions, and all of a sudden your state party starts to matter, and it can start to exert itself vis-a-vis the national party. But if everybody's just going in and rubber stamping everything that happened, well, the national party's just learned that essentially the states and everybody else, they've given up, everyone's gone home, and they just lay down and they do whatever the heck we want. So that's why I think this was actually a very important development, because rebuilding these state conventions, I think, is the key to revitalizing enthusiasm within the Republican Party, but also rebuilding the Republican Party structure to reflect the will of the states, which I think is the key, actually, to electoral success.
How's Cuccinelli doing against coming up against his opponent? How's he rating?
I think he's ahead of McAuliffe, isn't that right, Matthew?
Yes, yeah. The most recent polls, likely voters have him. The one that was that came out 2 weeks ago is 51-41 among likely voters, Cuccinelli. The dynamic is much different than presidential elections. If you remember, Obama did win in 08. He won Virginia by a pretty wide margin in 2009 on the backs of Tea Party activists. Cuccinelli got 56 or 57% of the vote. The Republican ticket in its entirety got between 58 and 56% of the vote. And I think the turnout model is very different, and I think that we'll see increased Republican turnout, increased conservative turnout. By the end of the week or next week, we'll see numbers with Jackson on the ticket. Jackson brings a very different dynamic to this ticket, and it may be reflected in poll numbers. But I think that the folks who came out to support him will stay involved and will do the hard work, going door to door, making the phone calls, reaching out to their neighbors and folks they go to church with, and so on and so forth, and help push that ticket to victory in November.
Hmm. Well, this is great stuff. I'm glad you came on. I really appreciate this.
It's a big deal, and I think also, you know, we got to put these things together, and the way to put it together is realize all these scandals are going on right now, and it's important to understand that these scandals that are occurring on the national scene are of a piece. Okay, it isn't about whether it's the IRS or the AP hack or Benghazi or Fast and Furious or raiding Gibson guitars or the EPA running wild. It is about the fact that you have an entrenched and ever expansive government bureaucracy, that these people hold on to their careers and advancement and bonuses. I mean, you notice a lot of these IRS people are getting, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in bonuses for doing what? Basically for attacking Tea Party, pro-life
people.
Groups, for you know, harassing people. So what you have is an antipathy of that these government lifers have, not only towards Congress, okay, but towards the American people in general. They're putting themselves ahead of you as a different class. They want to be your masters. Now, I'm not saying that every government employee is bad. I believe a lot of people probably join, you know, work for the government as a sense of service, you know, civil service, and they want to do their job, just like some politicians go as citizen statesmen into government as opposed to career politicians. But there's lacking quantities of those. And the reason for that is because we don't understand our process. We don't participate in our process, and we lack the virtue and diligence to stay involved, because if you're not vigilant, you lose liberty. And one of the excuses that these guys are giving with these scandals right now, you know, is, well, you know, we can't know everything that's going on in government. It's too big. Right. Well, that's the problem. You bring it back into its constitutional limits within the enumerated powers, and then you can actually execute, that's what the executive is supposed to do, the legitimate functions of government pursuant to the laws passed by Congress.
Well, and then that gets back to the argument that, hey, we need a more limited, smaller government. That's what we've been saying. And now the left is like, oh, the government's too big. You can't possibly run all of this. And their response on the Republican side, the conservative side, should be, yes, exactly. That's what we've been saying.
I know. They're missing so many opportunities. They're missing so many opportunities. It's disgusting.
I don't know that they're missing them. I don't think they're missing them. They don't want to take them. See, people like Boehner, right, want to stand up and say, I don't care who gets fired. I care about who's going to jail. Well, listen, you orange-crying piece of beef jerky. What have you done to start proceedings to put someone in jail? Nothing. You're a complete
he's
pussy.
Blocked.
You
he's
just
blocked.
Talk big. Yeah, he talks big and he doesn't do shit, because this Republican leadership doesn't want to dismantle the expansiveness of government. They just merely want to be in charge of it. And that's precisely why their rhino, because they knew that things were going to be bad and they didn't want to be blamed for it, you know, blame Bush thing, which is precisely why their rhino didn't press Obama on any of these things. And let's face it, these scandals, these aren't new. Okay, the AP one might be somewhat new. They're not new scandals. All of these, all of them, especially Benghazi, existed prior to the election. And Romney didn't once press Obama on this stuff. He was a setup to lose from the beginning, and what happened in Tampa, which is the opposite of what just happened in Richmond, is the reason why, and it's because you've let the Republican Party get away with being a bunch of squishes, as Ted Cruz calls them, and it's time for you to step up and make it happen. So, you know, these things are all of a piece. I mean, you mentioned, you know, executing with drones. You got to watch what they're doing this coming Thursday. Okay, and one other, let's keep in mind, these scandals weren't spontaneously released all at the same time. The Obama administration did that. It's a way of overwhelming and distracting, principally to highlight the IRS and AP scandals, bad as they are, to overshadow Benghazi, which is far worse, to obfuscate the fact that we've got a major movement going on in Syria, right? You've got the Russian fleet entered the Mediterranean for the first time, I think, since 1992. Missiles were delivered. This is nothing unusual. Putin had agreements with Assad before, and it's all in the up and up. And Assad is actually beating some of these rebels now. Unfortunately, we've got Hezbollah fighters from Lebanon siding with his regime, which is not a good idea. But, you know, given the fact that al-Qaeda is the alternative, maybe it's not the worst of ideas. And we're on the wrong side of this equation. You got, you know, Tea Party darling Marco Rubio with his, you know, following Lindsey Graham and John McCain with, you know, hey, we have a hard-on for any war that we can get involved in, irrespective of whether it's in our interests or not. So that's going on. And then Obama, this coming Thursday, is going to be giving a speech to clarify his drone policy.
No.
Now, that's kind of interesting. Why are we doing that now? Were these scandals designed to kind of obfuscate the direction they're going in? You got to put, you know, you got to, it's oftentimes, it's not what they're doing and what they're talking about, but what
they're
not
up.
Talking about. Yep.
Well, add the Afghanistan situation with the 17 that died. You know, for those who have not heard that, they did a press conference. It's pretty long. You got to sit down and watch it. And they had the families there of these SEAL team guys that got killed. Describing what went on, the information they've gotten. They've had some high-level retired admirals were there. You know, that guy, I'm sorry, I don't remember his name, but he was the head of the Pacific Fleet, and he was supporting these guys going, this was a shady frickin' deal, and those 17 men were put in harm's way, and they died for it. You know, incorrect equipment, incorrect helicopter. They had stand down orders. They couldn't fire at the enemy as they were coming in because we didn't want to, you know, that doesn't build goodwill with our enemies. So the guys came in a bad piece of machinery and they couldn't do suppression fire to go into combat. They had massive, you know, it's the same thing with Benghazi. They had massive information on the ground that this valley was erupting with bad guys. And they send in 17 guys to die is basically the dialogue on this story. And it's getting no coverage. And it's huge. It's ugly what happened to these men.
The British Admiralty, didn't they tell the Lusitania to turn off one of its coal boilers in order to save coal as it moved into the red zone of the German U-boat?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that just amazing when you hear this stuff?
On the very day that King was asking, like, hey, if the Germans sunk a boat carrying American passengers, do you think the U.S. would get involved in the war? And our response was, yeah, probably. Anyway, interesting.
You can go back to the USS Maine and Havana Harbor. I mean, you know, these kinds of pretexts for war have always been there because war is not only extremely profitable for those who finance all sides involved, but it is a great way to get people focused and distracted on giving up their essential liberties at home because of the rah-rah-rah nationalistic jingoism. You know, keep in mind, patriotism is love of country, jingoism is love of war, and nationalism is love of nation above all else. Patriotism requires you to question those in power without compromising your fellow countrymen out of love for country. And that's what we need more of. And you know, it's funny because there are people on the left who, you know, take the good things that anybody else in the world does and laud them for being so wonderful, even though most of what they do is shit and atrocious. And then they pick the worst things of what we do and highlight those and say, well, America sucks, right? Well, that's not true. America has been the greatest single force for good in the world in the last 200 mm-hmm. years, okay? Are we perfect? No. Have we done some horrible things? Yes. For the most part, though, those horrible things have been done by the federal government over and against the people, okay? That doesn't mean we're perfect and totally virtuous, but we're certainly better more often than we're not. But then, you know, then if you criticize the government, you're considered an America hater. I would argue that if you don't criticize your government, you're an America hater, because clearly most of these people running the federal government are America haters. And what we have to realize is that criticizing your government is patriotism. It doesn't mean you're anti-government. We don't want to be anarchists. I mean, some people do, and, you know, that's fine. That's their thing. I think that that's just one step towards tyranny. But if you love your country, you want a restrained government, which means you always want to be criticizing it, keeping an eye on it, because liberty requires perpetual vigilance. And that's something we're losing. You don't have to be anti-American to criticize your government. You have to be pro-Constitution and pro-America to criticize your government appropriately. And that doesn't mean you just latch on to some scandal like all these things we've had here for political points. Now, mind you, if you can take Hillary out for 2016, that's a great victory. But that cannot be your principal purpose. Your principal purpose must be good governance. When you have a taxing authority that can intrude into every aspect of your life, you don't want anybody in government with that kind of power, because it will be misused by whichever party, whichever person. When you start playing the game where, hey, as long as my guys are in power who favor me, then I don't care, then you got a problem, because the Constitution is about limiting all of their power, not just the ones who agree with you. And that's what we're facing right now. And what you need to realize is that when you look at someone like Ted Cruz or Rand Paul or Justin Amash, don't focus on 2016. Because we got a lot of work to do between now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And you support them for taking these positions and taking these principle stances to actually get to the bottom of these scandals and figure out where the government is out of bounds and how to put it back in that box.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Don't all talk at the same time.
All right, we've got some clips that we can talk to, so you tell me where you want to start. I've got Mike Kelly. It's a five-minute clip talking about the IRS scandal, or we can go with Newt Gingrich on Hannity talking about Benghazi. Someone call it out, and I'll run with it.
IRS.
Mike Kelly. Yeah, let's go there.
Mike Kelly. All right, let's come back on the other side of this. It is a five-minute clip, so if you want to just put your phone on mute or whatever, and grab a beer, smoke, or what have you. We'll chat about it on the other side.
George, you have been on the job since November of 2004, is that correct? In your
yes,
current position?
2004.
Anything rise to this level before?
No, nothing.
Can I ask you, why did it take so long from the first time we knew that this was happening to the got the report done? I met the president said just the other day, I think it was yesterday, that he just got a look at the report, and that's the first time he knew anything about it.
Well, first,
other than reading it in the papers, I guess.
Are you asking how?
Have you ever seen that magnitude before? Anything
no,
this magnitude?
No.
It's never come up before.
No, it has not.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Now you've been on the job for quite some years, but the current job you're in is from November 9th, 2012. So is that right? So you just took over as acting commissioner.
In November of 12. Yes,
okay.
I have both jobs.
All right. But before that, one of your jobs, you were the commissioner of tax-exempt and government entities division. So you actually were in the job that we're questioning now, that group of what was happening there. So would you have been in Cincinnati?
No.
You were never in Cincinnati?
No.
So is Cincinnati some outpost?
So obviously the IRS is a nationwide organization.
Oh, I know. I understand that. I understand that. And I want to tell you, listen, believe me, if you think it's uncomfortable sitting over there, you ought to be a private individual when the IRS is across from you questioning. So I got to tell you, it's uncomfortable for everybody. But my question more specifically is, so how did Cincinnati get to where they are? How did they develop that strategy? And how did they know to go after these certain groups? How did they target those folks? That just... couple rookies just showed up, didn't really know what they were doing?
So again, I would point to the TIGDA report on what happened.
No, I understand that. I understand that. But I'm hearing these are a couple. It's always these are low level people that push the wrong button. Now, when Cincinnati can't figure out, who do they confer with? Who's their counsel? When they're looking at these entities, entities. Come back here to D.C.?
There's two possibilities.
Yes or no? Does it come back to D.C.?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So D.C. and Cincinnati, we're pretty well connected and understanding what's going on. So this doesn't come as a great shock to anybody. In fact, I would say it doesn't come as a shock. You know what it does for the American people? It really establishes what they feared so often. I have a grandson who's afraid to get out of bed at night because he thinks there's somebody out of the bed that's going to grab him. And I think most Americans feel that way about the IRS. I mean, you get a letter from you folks or a phone call, it's with terror that you look at it. And now this kind of reconfirms that, you know what? They can do almost anything they want to anybody they want, anytime they want. This is very chilling for the American people. Now, I know that where you're at, you're resigning. You're walking away from it. But this is not going to go away. This is a Pandora's box that has been opened, and I don't think get the lid back on it. And I don't believe that the White House just found out about this in a news report. The president happened to grab a TV shot or just read Mr. George's report and said, you know what, anybody heard about this before? I'm just getting a first look at this. Shouldn't somebody be responsible? And I'm thinking maybe the executive office, maybe Treasury falls in there. I'm not sure that we understand how that organizational chart works. But I am really concerned. Now, I got to tell you, where you're sitting, you should be outraged. But you're not. The American people should be outraged, and they are. And this committee, this has nothing to do with political parties. This has to do with highly targeted groups. This reconfirms everything that the American public believes. This is a huge blow to the faith and trust the American people have in their government. Is there any limit to the scope of where you folks can go? Is there anything at all? Is there any way that we could ask you, is there any question that you shouldn't have asked? My goodness, how much money do you have in your wallet? Who do you get emails from? Whose sign do you put up in your front yard? This is a tax question. Now, you don't think that's intimidating? It's sure as hell intimidating. And I don't know that I got any answers from you today. And I don't know that what Mr. George has done is great work. But you know what? There's a heck of a lot more that has to come out in this. And anybody to sit here today and listen to what you have to say, I am more concerned today than I was before. And the fact that you all can do just about anything you want to anybody, you know, you can put anybody out of business that you want anytime you want. And I got to tell you, you talked about you're a horribly run organization. If you're on the other side of the fence, you're not given that excuse. And when the IRS comes into you, you're not allowed to be shoddy. You're not allowed to be run horribly. You're not allowed to make mistakes. You're not allowed to do one damn thing that doesn't come in compliance. If you do, you're held responsible right then. I just think the American people have seen what's going on right now in their government. This is absolutely an overreach, and this is an outrage for all America. I yield back.
All right. Mr. Griffin is recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr.
All right.
There you have it.
The committee will come to order.
Very powerful. That's how your Congress is supposed to keep an eye on the executive. T. Coleman Andrews was an IRS commissioner in the 1950s. I'm going to read a quote by him and then open up the floor, and I know Matthew has some comments to make regarding his dealings with the IRS. This is a quote from T. Coleman Andrews, IRS commissioner. "The income tax is bad because it was conceived in class hatred, is an instrument of vengeance, and plays right into the hands of the communists. It employs the vicious communist principle of taking from each according to his accumulation of the fruits of his labor and giving to others according to their needs. The income tax is fulfilling the Marxist prophecy that the surest way to destroy a capitalist society is by steeply graduated taxes on income and heavy levies upon the estates of people when they die. I believe that a better way to raise revenue not only can be found, but must be found, because I am convinced that the present system is leading us right back to the very tyranny from which those who established this land of freedom risked their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to free themselves." That is pretty powerful, and the power to tax is the power to destroy. And until you understand that, It isn't a party thing. It isn't, you know, this administration, that administration. It is purely and simply the fact that the income tax is destructive. Let's go to Tex first, and then Matthew, and then Chris.
Absolutely. The income tax allows the government to get into every aspect of your life, because your life, you require everything costs money, so you have to have an economic life in order to survive, and all of that has to be reported to the government. Well, the government knows all of that stuff, since you can start snuffing out your sources of income and thus ruin your life, essentially. It's not an authority that ever should have been turned over to the government in the first place. And then, as Mike Kelly was saying, the expectation from the IRS is you're not allowed to make a mistake. You can't make a mistake. And if you do, penalties and interest are charged for making that mistake. But the IRS... Yeah, exactly. Thus, Wesley Snipes is caught up in bad legal advice. But, you know, when the IRS, when they come under scrutiny, it's like, oh, well, we don't know. The government's too big. We can't figure all this stuff out. I don't know who did that. I don't know. You know, here I am in this office running this thing. But, I mean, come on. There's hundreds of bureaucrats down there doing all sorts of stuff. I'm not aware of exactly what's going on. And, you know, come on, cut me some slack. It doesn't work that way. The government is the one that should be held to the standard of perfection in its actions, because they've got trillions of dollars at their disposal in order to administer these programs. If you can't administer the program, you shouldn't be enacting it in the first place. Right? But now they're up there saying that, well, we don't know. We can't figure it out. It's too complex. It's too complicated. And I say that, you know, this comes down to, does this agency make any sense? Is it time to start looking at revamping this thing? Isn't this why something like a flat tax would be a better idea, if you want to kind of go a de minimis route, or eliminate it altogether and replace it with something like a national sales tax? But I wouldn't replace it with a national sales tax unless you have an amendment that says, we have a national sales tax, there is no more national income tax, and there cannot be a national income tax and a national sales tax at the same time. Because
and
if you eliminate
sales tax.
Yeah. If you eliminate the one without eliminating, or if you enact the one without eliminating the other, pretty soon you're going to have both. So I think that's, you should be pressing that point, that it's an agency that doesn't know what it's doing. Clearly, it's claiming, going up there and testifying, that it doesn't know what it's doing, and it's unaware of how to administer these programs. And so, okay, well, you know, let's have a conversation about, does it make sense for you guys even to be an agency anymore? And is this really something, is this really the best way to get our revenues, when we already know that, you know, as Mitt Romney said, oh, you've got 48% of people aren't paying taxes. Okay, well, if there's a national sales tax, everybody would be paying taxes. But you got to buy something to live. So
well, you wouldn't
that
be
sounds
reporting
like a better
anything
way to,
go. To anybody. You wouldn't be reporting
yeah.
anything to anybody. And the compliance costs, which people – don't really talk about
oh,
it,
yeah.
but the compliance cost and time, money spent, tax accountants as opposed to accountants who are, you know, helping you improve and streamline your business, just spending all their time just filing tax documents and tax attorneys for all the interactions with the IRS. All of this cost is wicked out of your productive economy. It takes jobs away. It reduces everybody's wealth, and it creates a tyrannical system of intrusion, especially if you're trying to do something that might actually kill the beast itself. That isn't necessarily about elections, but it could very well be about taking political action to put the government back into its box of enumerated powers. And I think you had some experience with that, didn't you, Matthew?
Oh, sure. Yeah, the power to tax is the power to destroy. And the ability, as the congressman indicated, was it's a terrifying entity. It's a terrifying organization if you get a letter or a phone call from the IRS, and in my experience of an organization I work very closely with is the Leadership Institute. And, you know, they've been around since 1979. They've trained over 122,000 conservative activists. And in 2011, the IRS opened an audit against the Leadership Institute and asked them for what amounted to over 23,000 pages of documents. So 23,000 pages of documents. They asked them basic questions like, who are your interns and who did they go on to work for after they ended their program? It ended up costing the Leadership Institute $50,000 in legal fees to comply over the course of this this six-month period. And in fact, one of the Tea Party groups that was targeted, the Hawaii Tea Party, they received a questionnaire from the IRS that asked, what is your relationship to the Leadership Institute? Provide training documents and manuals that they provided you. So this is a hunt for a hunt against conservatives by an organization that has the power to destroy. It wasn't just up and coming groups that were trying to start out. These were, you know, the Leadership Institute is an existing organization that if they didn't have the resources, they wouldn't have been able to comply, and the IRS would have shut them down.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, well, that's right.
It was an attempt to harass and to destroy the organizations and deny them the rights, or if they gave the right to know absolutely everything about them and to get inside the organization, every single thing that's going on. Well, one of the benefits of being a nonprofit organization is you don't have to disclose who your donors are. But they want to know that stuff ahead of time, already as a condition for approving the organization.
Oh, you know what absolutely. This is? This is exact same thing that the gun owners, the Second Amendment people of this country fear with a national registry, is that you get so much information on people that all you have to do is at will, you can crush any opposition anytime you want. That's really what it's about. The same with gun registration. Next step is confiscation. You can crush your opponents one by one or in mass. It's the same thing. It's tyranny,
well,
period, end of report.
No, you nailed it, and it's absolutely the same thing. I mean, first of all, the idea of gun restriction or gun registration, whatever they want to call it, is in clear violation of not only the Constitution proper, but also the Second Amendment, talking about the right of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed. Anything you want to do regarding gun control has to be done through Article 5 of the Constitution, because the Constitution specifically says they cannot infringe it. And it also calls the first part of that amendment, we had a show about it a few weeks ago, please go to Blog Talk Radio or our Facebook page, the Tex and Rex Show, and you can look it up. It was called Liberty is Security, and we talked with Revitalizing the Second Amendment about a well-regulated militia of the several states. Because ultimately, the Constitution is just a piece of parchment. It is not a self-enforcing document. It is only enforced by the people whose sovereignty is God-given, and we cede some of that sovereignty to government within very specifically delineated limits in order to organize our lives together. But we don't give up our sovereignty. We merely hand over some of it to people temporarily within those prescribed limits. The way you enforce it is by having a well-regulated militia, not random posses running around with guns, but talking about state militias that are properly ordered, well-regulated, in order to keep the power local. And unless you have recourse to guns, that doesn't mean you have to use the guns, but unless you have recourse to guns, the government will grow to the point and monopolize weaponry, and then you will become slaves. That's why it's there. But what's worse is that this particular, quote, independent agency, which is really a private corporation incorporated in the state of Delaware, and when you write your checks to the IRS, check out who endorses the back of that check. Of course, these days it's all electronic, but it goes into the Federal Reserve Bank, which is a private banking cartel. It is not the Department of the Treasury. Okay, that's the fundamental problem. Taxes that are collected by the federal government are supposed to go into the Treasury, not into a private bank that controls the money supply. This particular agency, and in fact the very woman who was in charge of these investigations into, quote, patriots, 9/12, Tea Party, people who are teaching about the Constitution, is going to be in charge of implementing the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act tax. They've already hacked 10 million medical records through this illegal agency, and the Department of Health and Human Services is writing regulations where all of your medical records will be controlled by this agency that will be enforcing this, quote, health care law. If that doesn't scare the shit out of you, I don't know what will, because once they control your guns and they control your health through the IRS and they control your food through the FDA and USDA, which are currently run by Monsanto lobbyists, you have no liberty. And if that doesn't get you off your ass and get other people involved and get the Cheetos out of your mouth and turn off Dancing with the Douchebags and get involved in the political process, then you have actually become part of the problem, because tyranny is ever present and it is only kept at bay by a vigilant public that is fighting for liberty constantly. And if you're not in the fight, you're part of the problem. And if you're not getting other people involved, whether they're unaware, because ignorance is not an excuse, or whether they don't care, then you're part of the problem too. And it's your country that you're losing, and don't wait until it's gone to sit there and lament the loss. Because if this goes, the entire planet is going to fall into slavery. Rant over. Talks amongst yourselves.
Very true. Well, and this brings up a very important point, you know, in terms of the IRS in general, you know, because whether you look at the EPA or you look at the ATF or you look at any of these organizations, you know, these departments that have been built and empowered, you know, they write their own laws, they write their own rules, they write their own warrants. You know, it is amazing to me that people that in this day and age, for me, because of my age, I can look back at a different world that wasn't that long ago, and I remember it. You know, the difference, the freedom to, you know, choose your own pathway, to start a business, to succeed, to fail, to get back up, do it again. I see very little of that around me, and it's amazing to me how few people even care. I mean, they're so numb. I don't know if it's because everybody's medicated, you know, or the MTV generation and that whole dynamics has taken over people's brains. There's days I get up and I'm thinking, holy shit, we're screwed. And we're not screwed because Obama's in power. We're screwed because people aren't even awake. And that's the part,
well, yeah.
You know, and you know, and your rant is so, and you and I, you know, we talk a lot. But it is so mind-boggling to me how few people respond besides just getting caught up in the news of the day. But understanding the depth behind this stuff, it's like you talked about Benghazi earlier. Benghazi isn't about the four guys that got killed. Yeah, that's bad, and it's terrible. But it's about who's running guns to Syria. You know, I
yep.
mean, it's like the whole story hasn't even been connected. They found weapons and missile launchers from the Syrian, you know, revolution, which wasn't a revolution. It was an invasion by Al-Qaeda and the rest of the scum of the earth and the Muslim Brotherhood. And then they found weapons all over the world being used against other people. I mean, it was like, hello? And nobody ties any of this shit together. And here we sit getting caught up with the next five issues, and nobody's even talking about immigration. All the damn amendments were voted down, and they were voted
Chris,
down.
Let's tie it back to Benghazi. In fact, we'll start off with a little commentary by Newt Gingrich about Benghazi. But real quick, Matthew, I think you've got to run, and we thank you so much for joining us. And Chris, what you were just talking about people not being involved. Well, you know, Matthew just clearly showed us that. You know, with the convention, more people got involved. He was down there. We got a really conservative lineup for Virginia, which is huge because, remember, we border the imperial city here in the Commonwealth. And I think it's important that we have, you know, conservatism right next door to this rampant tyranny. So we appreciate you and all the other delegates doing the hard work, and thank you for giving us the report.
Yes.
Is there anything on your mind before you take off that you'd like to leave us with?
You know, what I'd say is if you want to get back at the IRS, take a Leadership Institute training and get involved in the process. I've been to a number of conventions now. You guys mentioned the RNC summer meeting. Actually, they moved from Chicago to so they can stand in solidarity with the victims of the Boston bombing. I'll be there again with our national committeeman here in Virginia to keep an eye on the party. I travel the country with the Leadership Institute to train grassroots conservatives all over the country. The training is cheap or free most of the time. A lot of it is available online for free at their website, leadershipinstitute.org. I would check that out, get your neighbors involved, and really the only way we can make change is by changing the folks who are making the laws. So get involved and find somebody who's principled and who'll do what's right and fight for those people.
Great.
Amen.
Absolutely. Everybody check that out, and I'll put the links on our page. Thanks, Matthew, and keep us abreast of what's going on. Thanks for that update. I honestly hadn't caught that the meeting had moved from Chicago to Boston. That's good to know, and we're glad that you're going there. And obviously, you know, Mr. Blackwell, we're counting on his leadership to help us right this this national debacle. And again, I'd be very honest with you, I have no love for the Republican Party, but you know, we have a duopoly right now, and the Democrats certainly aren't going to be helpful. So we've really got to shore up conservatism in the Republican Party, and we appreciate your efforts in that regard. And thanks for joining us tonight.
Exactly. Always great to talk to you guys.
Thanks,
bud. Take care, man.
Thanks for coming on.
All right, gentlemen, why don't we listen to a little Newt, always good for giving us some insights, and then we'll kind of try and tie in this the scandals, the IRS thing, and the two things that Chris mentioned, Benghazi, our foreign interventionist, jingoistic foreign policy, and this so-called, quote, immigration bill. This clip's about 3.5 minutes. It's Newt. Unfortunately, it's got that moronic cheerleader Hannity asking the questions, but Newt does most of the talking. Here it is.
And welcome back to Hannity. We continue now with former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. The question on Benghazi, we haven't been talking about that I want most answered, is I want to know who brought into this false narrative that it was spontaneous, and that this was in retaliation to a YouTube video. What is the one question you'd like answered, or maybe you have a number of them?
No, look, I think there's a core question here. When the State Department head of communications says, my building's leadership doesn't like the CIA's analysis, the question you have to ask is, first of all, it's an interesting language. My building's leadership, does she mean Secretary Clinton, who was the leader of the State Department? But secondly, what is it they didn't like about it? I think what's really frightening is much deeper than anybody's talked about yet. I think this may not have been driven by Obama's reelection. I think this may have been driven by the passion the State Department has to avoid telling the truth about radical Islamists. And I think what they were afraid of was that if people understood that this was, in fact, a radical Islamist attack which had killed an American ambassador and three other Americans, that the anger of the American people would have been focused on radical Islam at a time when the State Department was trying to support a president who came out of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. So in my mind, the narrative here may relate more to the desperation of the State Department to blame America first. Remember, they all wanted to blame this one stupid video. The president mentions it in a United Nations speech. It comes up again and again. And I think it's partly because on the left, it's so much easier to blame Americans than it is to tell the truth about who our enemies are. So it may be that this is a cultural story more than a political story.
Don't you think, though, that it has to be seen through the prism of the election? Because their narrative was that Al-Qaeda had been beaten because bin Laden was dead?
No, you know, I would have said that if the person speaking had been from the White House staff. But the person who's speaking is Secretary Clinton's agent. And you may well be right. That's certainly in Washington the smaller view. But I'm just really struck, even as recently as the Boston bombing, when you have two Chechens engaged in a bombing, and the first reaction is, gee, I wonder what their motives were. You almost want to break down and cry. I mean, this is a willful hiding from the truth that goes on over and over among our elites. And so I think they were eager to grasp on this film because the film allowed them to attack an American. Whereas if the real culprits, as they turned out to be, were radical Islamists,
interesting,
then it would have been another example. This is not something, Sean, I came to early on. It was only as I kept thinking, why is it the director of State Department Communications speaking on behalf of, quote, my building's leadership who is driving this? It's not the White House. The White House would have been purely, narrowly political, and I frankly be giving you a different analysis tonight.
Isn't the guy that made the film still in jail? Interestingly enough, out of all this. Now, here's my point.
I actually don't know.
I think he might be.
Why would he be in jail?
remember they put him in jail for he had a probation or a violation of some sort, and he.
Yeah, well, someone should go to jail. Folks, we've got about 30 minutes of live air left. The call-in number is 646-649-1013. We're going to go to Tex and then Chris. Let's comment on Benghazi and how it plays into what the hell's going on here.
Well, I mean, this comes down to a fundamental point, which is that we have our government has declared war on terrorism, but we have a current administration that doesn't want to talk about that war. And so we've declared war on something that is formless and shapeless that we don't necessarily want to talk about. And so whenever it rears its ugly head and does something, we don't want to talk about that either. We certainly don't want to call it out in the open as to what happened or blame, you know, the people, the perpetrators of it, because, oh, God, you know. So we have this shifting, formless war on God only knows what, and whenever it, you know, our enemies show up and attack us, we can't even claim that, oh, our enemies actually attacked us over here. So what is this? I mean, what are we doing? What is the purpose of all of this? We're involved in this, you know, this conflict that just keeps sucking us deeper and deeper in. And then when our enemies, who definitely feel that we're all over them, you know, when they come and they counterstrike or they punch back against us, well, we can't claim that, okay, well, you know, here our enemies have done this. There's no clarity in this thing. There's no clarity. There's no delineation. There's no sense of what our goals or purpose is. There's just this ever-increasing quicksand that we keep sinking into in the Middle East without any purpose. You know, this is part of the thing you were talking about, you know, getting rid of Assad or the Assad regime, or reducing his influence down to whatever the three cities he's got right now. You know, okay, so we're doing that, but what is the point? What is the purpose? What is our goal there? It doesn't really fit into a goal because these goals are never enunciated to us, partly because we don't know who the enemy is, or the government's not being straight to us about who the enemy is. It's all done with a nod and a wink. You know who we really mean, but we can't say it because now we have a global media, so if we say it, then everybody else will know. Oh, the enemy will know that we know that it's the enemy because they're pretty clear that we're their enemy, so why are we being coy about who our enemies are? It's just, it leads to this level of absurdity and ridiculousness and getting us into conflict that can't possibly be supported by the American people because the American people don't know what they're supporting. What is the purpose of these conflicts? Who are our enemies? We don't know. Do you support it? Yes or no? How could you support that?
Well, look at Egypt, Tex. You know, look at the end result of Egypt after our involvement in billions of dollars, and now we send them 20 F-16s and 200 Abrams tanks, and anybody with a brain knows that we basically supported a revolution that turned into a takeover by the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, and yet that doesn't even get discussed. When you look at Benghazi, or, you know, you look at Libya, or you look at Syria, or you look at what potentially could happen in the Caucasus, you know, the whole northern sphere up there, you know, Iran and Afghanistan and Pakistan, you know, that's, I mean, you begin to, you know, I mapped this out and talked about this last week, but when you start looking at that map, you start thinking, holy crap, are we moving, you know, through the whole Middle East and working our way north into the belly of Russia? I mean, you don't know. That's the scary part, is what is the goal? And most of us have done the research in the past. Remember the general that came out and talked about the plan that he saw to topple, I don't remember his name.
Clark.
I'm sorry, I'd have to
Wesley
look.
Clark.
Yeah, Wesley Clark. He talked about this plan in the Bush administration to topple these seven countries. Now, of course, these seven countries all refused to bow down to the U.S. oil petrodollar, so you can get into that whole economic, you know, global conspiracy, you know, on the economic side of things. But the bottom line is, you know, Russia and China, when they talk, it was very interesting to when you listen to Clark. He said this plan was contingent on a very fast, fluid movement through the Middle East. In 3 or 4 years, have it done. Because sooner or later, people would start to catch on. People would start to fight back. Another superpower might rise up, and we only have a short window of time. It seems to me, call me crazy, that they're still trying to implement a plan, and it's a failed plan, and they're still trying to implement it. That's the scary part. And that's the part, you know, I have this weird feeling, you know, I'm not an expert on this stuff, But I have this feeling that this is going to blow up in our faces. It's already blowing up in our faces. Iraq has got multiple bombings every damn day. They're killing people in Iraq.
Oh, yeah. And Afghanistan. And Afghanistan and Pakistan. I mean, look, Pakistanis just had an election, and, you know, it was violence. People are being killed. I mean, they've killed a couple of elected people, I think. You know, it's a volatile situation. And when you start poking around a hornet's nest and you don't know who's friend and who's foe, all you're going to do is engender blowback, waste a lot of money, kill a lot of people, and then come up with this new concept, as Tex was talking about, this undefined target, come up with this new concept like the way that, you know, Stale Moss, John McCain, Lindsey Lytton, his loafers Graham, and Marco, fake conservative Rubio, have been running their fucking mouths about, you know, America is the battlefield. No, America is our home. Does that mean that we're going to be attacked by others here? Probably, especially when we're poking the hornet's nest. But we can fix that. We can put them down. We can respond appropriately. In fact, with these two Chechens that blew up the marathon in Boston, we were told about them. We knew about them.
Mm-hmm.
But this administration invited them in, and the last one, and gave them asylum and put them on welfare. And then these two cocksuckers went, well, at least one of them went back to Chechnya, was training with some jihadists over there, and then came over here and blew up some people. It was horrible, and people died. And then what happened? You know, we ended up with a martial law type lockdown in order to catch him, and it was a private citizen who ended up catching him in the final analysis anyway. That's the kind of crap that's going on. And
there's cover up.
Always
too.
Happens. Tyranny abroad, which is what we're doing. That doesn't mean you don't go abroad for war. Justified, just wars declared properly. You go fight them when you have to. But tyranny abroad and foreign adventurism breeds tyranny at home. Okay, Orwell wrote about it in 1984. You know, Oceania was at war with Eurasia or East Asia all the time. Why? Because war gets you so frightened, you'll give up liberties in order to buy some security, but you won't end up with security. All you do is lose liberty because they cannot protect you. Even in the hardest lockdown police state, they can't prevent you from being hassled by criminals and terrorists. Only you can do that. Only you're the first responder, which is precisely why every single one of you who's able-bodied between the ages of 16 and 60 is supposed to be in the properly constituted, well-regulated militia. That's your homeland defense. That's what your founding fathers gave you. Instead, we're mucking around in things that we don't understand. I mean, look, is Assad a good guy? No, he's not. Okay, is Hezbollah a good group? Hell no. Okay, they're Muslim jihadists. They want to make everybody Muslim. They will fight us at some point. But for the most part, they're relegated to Lebanon, and they're probably Israel's problem. And I'm fairly confident that the IDF has a pretty good record. Since 1948, they've won every time except for 1973. So I think that they can handle it. Okay, but toppling Assad, which is the last secular Arab regime in the Middle East, is only going to open it up to a extremist Muslim regime, which is exactly what you saw all across North
Egypt.
Africa, from Tunisia to Egypt, okay? It's not helpful. And then, you know, we throw around words like Muslim Brotherhood. You know, who are these guys? Well, remember something. This was an organization of fundamentalist jihadi Muslims that rose up right after the Turkish Caliphate folded following World War One.
Mm-hmm.
So what
right.
these people are about is making the entire world Muslim by sword or terrorism. That's whose side we're on in the Middle East. Are you fucking kidding? We need to stop intervening in things we don't understand. And we need to stop wasting blood and treasure doing it.
Yeah. And nobody talks about Saudi in this whole thing. But anyway, go ahead.
But that's what the Benghazi thing was about. And there were things there that, you know, they didn't want to leak out, right? And, of course, there was the election coming up, so they decided to obfuscate all this stuff. You know, you got Carney saying, oh, there was one revision. We changed the name of consulate to diplomatic installation because that was improper. Well, that's clearly a lie because they made 12 different revisions in order to cover the whole thing up, and this does go all the way up to Hillary Clinton and Obama. Right?
Well,
because he's either completely incompetent or he's involved. Go ahead, Dex.
In fairness, they did only change one thing. All they did was remove the truth.
At what point, what does this matter anyway, Tex?
Yes, that's right. what does it matter? People are dead. What does it matter who, whether they were there for this, that, or the other? What matters is that we get to the bottom of it. Well, then it totally matters why they were there. Oh, God, this is the stupidest statement ever.
You hear about the
back to haunt her.
You hear about the new whistleblower. He's Colonel Cook, who is the main military guy in that area and who sets up all of the security. I mean, he's not one of the guys that were, like, at the stand. This guy's even bigger than that. And he said there was over 123 incidences in the last 6 months leading up to this, including American soldiers had had conflict situations, including they'd found a bomb on the damn wall of the embassy or whatever the hell you want to call it this time. And he was screaming, going, this is not a safe environment for these people, and this guy's a big shot. And he was interviewed, Geraldo broke it yesterday. He was drooling all over himself that he got his hands on this story. So this is the next guy coming up going, bullcrap. They knew this place was volatile and it was increasing in violence, and they pulled. And a lot of people, I don't understand why the people on the right or the people in these hearings don't continually say this. Not only did they not send anybody in to attempt to help them, i.e. look at watch the damn movie Black Hawk Down, men lost their lives making, you know, doing whatever they could to get to their fellow soldiers under attack. That's America. Number two, they pulled 10 of 14 security people out of that area and left those guys with four people to defend themselves. And then they were using the Libyan, this ridiculous militia that, you know, that the guy was going, we couldn't trust these guys. And I told the State Department we couldn't trust these people to secure us. I mean, that's what Rand Paul said yesterday on Huckabee. You know, he's saying this needed a military oversight, not some State Department yahoos. You know, he said this is a volatile region, and everybody knew it was a high-risk area. This should have been well-protected. It's the same thing that happened to Clinton. The exact same situation happened Clinton's watch.
Wait, what, you're saying that Benghazi, the consulate and the embassy in Benghazi is not the same as the consulate or embassy in Brussels?
Yeah. Oh, and then you've heard Rand Paul get off on this thing that while they're screaming about money because the Democrats keep jumping up going, see, the sequester hurt us. Bullcrap. Had nothing to do with the sequester. They spent $80 million.
That was in March.
Dollars.
This happened in September.
I know, but they spent $80 million on a consulate that when they finally got done, they couldn't use it because they realized that they had balconies above the whole consulate. $80 million.
Yeah, like they didn't realize
right
that. Somebody has made a shitload of money doing that. Somebody made a lot of money
and
doing that.
And we couldn't protect our people. Go ahead.
Yeah, but let's face it. Even with all these problems, you've got a lot to be thankful for. You know, first of all, you're probably capable of holding your own umbrella, and that's, you know, that's important because, you know,
yeah,
some people need to violate the Marine Code in order to have an umbrella held for them. Apparently,
Marines
are only
supposed to hold for women.
Yeah, it's apparently important for the Marines to be called in to shield Obozo from a little drizzle, but we don't call in the Marines to protect American lives who are serving in the Foreign Service. And like Rand Paul said in a clip we played last week, make sure you check out last week's show. It's on Blog Talk Radio. You can listen to all our shows in archives. You can even right-click the download button and hit download, and you'll get an MP3 you can email to people or burn a CD. But Rand Paul said the first question to Hillary is, where the hell were the Marines? Well, apparently we call them in to put an umbrella over the president. But the other thing you have to be thankful for is despite all the fiat currency, the foreign wars, the corruption, everything else, you got toilet paper. In Venezuela, they lost their socialist dictator. They don't have toilet paper anymore. That's how bad things get when you take socialism to its logical conclusion. And if you like toilet paper, I suggest that you start rolling this thing back to a constitutional republic and a free market economy. Gentlemen, we got 20 minutes of showtime left. There's a lot to talk about. We'll probably keep going with this moving forward. But, you know, the thing you have to remember is, you know, the progressives set up America through their shenanigans and then blame everything gone wrong on America. You know,
yeah,
they set us up with these stupid policies, and they blame us. The right
sets us up the same way, and then they defend their dastardly deeds with this kind of jingoistic sense of nationalism disguised as false patriotism, and we're caught between this vice. The only way you're going to stop it is expose the truth, hold them to account, and support the people who are actually doing the work. You know, Congress is supposed to be your voice at the federal level. They are supposed to oversee the executive. The executive does not get to run amok doing whatever the hell it wants, and these unelected bureaucrats that are in the IRS, the EPA, the USDA, the FDA, who are actually from the very industries that they're purportedly, you know, regulating, or they're just thugs who are trying to abscond with your money and collect their bonuses. They don't care if they destroy your business or if you're sick or anything else. This has to stop. It is never an excuse for anybody in the executive to say, oh, well, that department's just too big. We don't really know what they're up to. Well, then quit increasing their fucking budget and cut it. We're already a trillion in the hole. How about we cut a trillion out and shrink these things back to where they're supposed to be? The other thing you have to be careful is they're flooding your borders. In fact, before the whole Chechnya thing, you know, we granted special immigration privileges to people from Saudi Arabia. What the hell is that all about? And then you're diminishing your warrior capacity. Ultimately, Rome caved because of fiat currency and diminishing warrior capacity, and they're doing the same thing to you. And what they are doing is they are purging your military of those who took an oath to defend the Constitution from enemies foreign and domestic, and they are filling the ranks with people who are careerists and who are loyal to big government. That is precisely why you don't want a standing army, because once you pilfer it and remove the patriots from it, you will get nothing but a force for tyranny. And that's why you need to revitalize the militia of the several states. So, you know, there's a lot to cover here, guys, but why don't we try to tie it up and bring it home in the next 15 minutes.
Tex.
Absolutely. Well, you know, part of the problem that we're having in the Middle East is, look, at least in terms of popular support, when we had the Iraq War, we knew what we were doing, okay? Or it was explained in a way that people thought they knew what we were doing, okay? So Saddam Hussein's a bad actor, he's a bad dictator, there's weapons of mass destruction in there, or so we think, and we're going to go in, we're going to get rid of him, and we're going to get rid of Saddam Hussein, this horrible dictator, and we're going to help set up some sort of representative form of government in the country so that the people of the Middle East have a say in how they're governed, okay? But what are we doing in Libya? You know, Gaddafi's a bad guy. We got to get rid of Gaddafi. Okay, what have we replaced him with? What are we doing over there to replace him? What is the next step? Now the country is completely atomized, and nobody knows what's going on over there. Okay, now we're doing the thing in Syria. You know, what is Syria basically is permanently shattered as a country now. Assad may be holding on to a few towns. I think he's concentrated around in Damascus and Homs, and he's going to hold on to the coast because without the coast, he's kind of doomed. You got the Kurds up in the northeast part of the country. They have their own thing going on, and then you have the rebels sort of in the northwest. But what is our goal? What are we trying to accomplish? Whose side are we on? What are we trying to replace Assad with? You know, we're not getting these types of communications, but we're seeing all kinds of action on the news. Oh, we need to get involved because now there are chemical weapons. Well, who's using chemical weapons against who? What is the point? What, you know, what's going on? How are we going to, so we stop that, but what do we do? You know, what is the goal? You know, and then we're just moving from country to another country to another country without really any sort of defined goal. And then when we get attacked back, we don't know who attacked us or why, or we're not willing to say who they are. I mean, it's madness to continue on this route and think that the American people are going to support it. They wonder, oh, well, the American people don't support us being over in the Middle East. Well, why would you? What in the hell is going on? Nobody knows. Nobody understands. It's like that M.C. Escher painting of the, or M.C. Escher drawing of all the swans coming together, you know, the flying geese. You know, you got the black geese and the white geese flying together, you know, looking up at that, and occasionally you can't figure out what the hell is going on. Occasionally it shits on your head. You know, I mean, what is our Middle East policy? I don't know. To destabilize the whole region and create chaos and division within it? Okay. Why? What would be the point of that? You know, maybe that is the goal. But articulate it in a way that the American people would support. And it might make sense. But otherwise, this is just madness and we need to stop.
I don't think they're going to articulate it.
Well, it's not sustainable, whatever it is. It's chaos leading to chaos. We couldn't control what's happening over there. if it continues to escalate in the direction it's going. You know, we're not going to be able to stop that because they're getting more and more power in some very bad people's hands, and they're violent and they're crazy, and they want total control and they want caliphate everywhere. And then if we pull out, they're going to turn on each other just like in Iraq. You know, I mean, it's insanity. And to think that, you know, if we want to – I mean, we've always played around behind the scenes in a lot of world politics. And you may destabilize an area, do this or that or the other, but it was a controlled environment. And you had a goal, like what you were saying, Tex. Now, it's like just chaos. And you think that we can control that chaos, it's like a nuclear reaction, you know, without the safeguards. It's uncontrollable. The question is that the end result, world war? What the hell? Who knows? I don't.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at it from the outside. I mean, okay, so let's assume, and this is always a problem in international politics, is that you assume that your opponent has this great plan, and everything he does with a purpose, and he never makes any mistake. And then the things that you do happen at random and happenstance, and, you know, you can't possibly figure it out because there's all this sort of confusion going on. So the reality is it's that way on both sides. But mm-hmm. if you were to ascribe that, okay, let's say everything is happening for a purpose and there's a reason and, you know, we're being governed by very smart people who know exactly what they're doing. Well, if this does have a purpose, the only possible
like
purpose...
Like the IRS.
Yeah, exactly. The only possible purpose I could discern from all of this is it seems to be an attempt to go back and undo the states that were created in the wake of colonialism. You know, they created these sort of mega states that govern over all of these tribes and, you know, created these big power centers to create, quote, nation states over there in the hopes that, you know, it's sort of like when Italy was unified, they said, okay, we've made Italy, now we have to make Italians. And so I think maybe when people were decolonialized in the Middle East, they said, okay, we made Iraq, now we have to make Iraqis. We made Libya, now we have to make Libyans. But it's a failure because everybody over there is still part of some sort of tribe, and maybe this is an attempt to just get rid of those nation states and just say, okay, everybody goes back to the tribes that they're part of in a way to atomize opposition. I don't know. Maybe that makes sense in some sort of way. Otherwise, I don't know what the hell we're doing. They're just rolling around.
Well, whether it makes sense or not,
them on the head.
What the hell business of ours is it?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have the money. We don't have the manpower. We don't even have the desire anymore. Most Americans are just fed up with this crap. And, you know, as far as a, you know, national security threat, okay, Iran might be working on getting a nuke. Well, you don't have to destabilize the Middle East to stop Iran from having a nuke. You just got to go in there and kill a few key people, blow up a few facilities, hack some computers. End of story, Iran doesn't have a nuke. Fine. You know, so
yeah,
why are we destabilizing the region?
Pretty fast.
Yeah, the only thing that we're giving aid to, okay, is the rise of Muslim jihadists who have been trying to kill us since the 14th century. They're not going to stop. There's really no need to antagonize them. What you do with people like that is when they come at you, you kill them. But you don't go hunting them down over there because if we fight them over there, we won't have to fight them over here. Clearly, the more we fight them over there, the more they have interest in coming over here to fight us. So perhaps
well, how
we
let them in here.
Right. Perhaps we should focus on homeland defense, and we don't need a Department of Homeland Defense to do it because homeland security is provided by you. Pick up a gun, man a post, call up the militia, and when these fuckers come over here to try to blow something up, you hunt them down and you kill them. You do that to enough of them, they'll stop coming because they'll realize, well, shit, it won't work. We can't terrorize the American people. Every time we send our guys over there, all they do is get more pissed off and kill them. You know, instead of going over there and screwing things up in their lands and getting innocent people killed who have nothing to do with the conflict. I mean, the Lebanese are sitting there, you know, they've got the ski in the mountains, they've got their coastline, you know, it's a country that's 40% Christian, and now they've got Hezbollah rolling through, Syria bombing them, Israel flying, you know, over their airspace, and they're completely screwed because we're helping destabilize Syria in order to help al-Qaeda take out a secular Arab regime. Bad as he is, that's the Syrians' problem. This is, and in the meantime, we're pissing off the Russians. Why would you want to piss off the Russians?
Because I can't do anything about it.
That's why. The Russians figured that out. They can't do anything about it.
Well, I don't know. All I'm saying
is... Yeah, it's pretty insane. It's pretty flippin' insane. I don't think I've ever seen an undefined... You know, people do not understand the Middle East. They don't understand the difference between the Shiite and the Sunnis. They don't understand that you pull apart those groups, and they have multiple fractions, and they've been killing each other for 1,400 years and arguing over who's the lineage and who's not, and... You got the Fivers, the Sixers, the Niners, the Twelvers, and the, you know, I mean, people don't get, we try to look at this thing through our monolithic mindset, you know, through our lineal world, and we don't understand it. And it's so intertwined. They will pool together to take on an enemy while at the same time they're still killing each other. You know, we're playing with a world we do not understand, and the more we tinker with it, the more volatile it's becoming. And then, here's the other problem: we're arming them. Oh my God! And then back to immigration. Wasn't that what you were going to come back to?
Sure, we got 10 minutes. Tie it up.
Well,
yeah.
I find it interesting that the two guys that stopped every amendment, not one guy I don't find interesting, but the other guy was Jeff Flake, our libertarian buddy. And, you know, and I threw out a comment. I haven't heard anybody follow up on this. I hear people just going all over the place going, why, Jeff Flake, he's so conservative, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, well, I don't know, is he an open border libertarian? Because he voted against every amendment that would have locked down security on our borders and gotten all these things in place before they gave people blanket amnesty. What do you guys think of that?
Well, what do you need to shore up the border for? I mean, are you worried about terrorists coming? You know, I mean, it's not just, you know, quote, Mexicans coming here to work at Taco Bell and mow your lawn. All right?
Well, that $6.3 trillion price tag that Heritage has come up with?
Yeah, there's that, plus there's drug cartels, there's gangs, like, you know, around the Imperial City we got MS-13, you've also got Muslim jihadists coming across. Right now, down Texas way, they've got a real problem with this virulent type of ant that's displacing the Texas fire ant, causing an ecological disaster. Plus, you've got giant African snails that carry several viruses running around down in southern Texas. You've got leishmaniasis, which is a Middle Eastern disease that's suddenly crossing the border. So you got a health risk,
how
an environmental risk, an economic
Rex?
Risk. You got TB. Okay, and so, you know, if you don't control your border, are you actually a nation, or are you simply a undefined geographic locality? I mean, what the hell is that all about? Okay, that doesn't mean that you know, people say, oh, but if they control the borders, they can force us to stay in and we can't get out. Yeah, look, anything is possible if you let a tyrannical government control things, but by the same token, having no control over essential things about security, such as who is and is not coming in and out of your country, that's kind of a problem. And it's all, if you look at all these things, from the IRS scandal to the AP to the Benghazi to the Fast and Furious, the Gibson guitars, the EPA, if you look at all of these things, our ridiculous foreign policy, drone strikes, it all points in one direction. It is either to establish a tyrannical police state or to take out the United States from inside, because no one else can take us from the outside. And if you don't step up now, just, you know, resign yourself to living in a third world banana republic, because that's what will happen. That's where this is all pointing. And it seems overwhelming, but just take it one step at a time. You've got people fighting a good fight. You've got good people up there on the Hill who are doing good work. Then you've got others who are bloviating, like Boehner and Cantor and Rubio. All right? Identify the rhinos, support the conservatives, and let's take the momentum we've got with all these scandals and put this progressive dog down. It's been gnawing at this country for 100 years. You know, this is the inheritance we've been given by generations from the that dastardly year of 1913. And as Ron Paul says, let's just repeal 1913. Repeal the Fed, the IRS, the 17th Amendment, shut the whole fucking thing down, and let's go back to a constitutional republic, for God's sake. All right, guys, we're almost out of time, so final thoughts. We'll go with Chris and then Tex.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Tex.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. I was just going to say, I don't think any Texan is going to mourn the loss of the fire ant, because the fire ant itself is an invasive species. So, you know, three cheers for that bastard going away. but what we have and what we've seen over the last week with the scandals is a government that is out of control. And the reason given by the government as to why it's out of control is because it's inherently uncontrollable. It's too big. It's too confusing. There's not enough time. Nobody can possibly know all of this stuff, this organization, and the way it's done or the way it's organized. It can't possibly function correctly to do these types of things. But yet, you have the party of Washington telling you to give it increasingly more control because they know better than everybody else. They can govern things better than everybody else. They're altruistic. Corporations are motivated by profit. We're motivated by altruism here. But we can't run it, and we don't know what's going on, and we're not accountable, and I wasn't at the meeting, and I didn't read the cable. Somebody else read them to me, but they're really busy. And so on and on, all the way throughout the world. Go, you know, look at what's going on in the Middle East. You know, how'd you like to be one of these countries you're being attacked by, you know, a country that's destabilizing you, and it's run by an organization that says that it doesn't know what's going on, what's happening, or why, and it can't possibly know because it's just too complicated a situation. Well, that's got to be a comforting thought. then you have the IRS investigating everybody. Well, you know, the people who are under investigation for, you know, applying for nonprofit status, they certainly didn't feel like this was an incompetent organization. They didn't know what it was doing. Those seem like pretty targeted questions being asked by someone who knew exactly the type of information they wanted, and it was pretty targeted information. And the question then was, what are they going to do with this information? I mean, this is pretty specific stuff. But all of a sudden, nobody knows, and, oh, well, we couldn't possibly know, and why would we ask that stuff? And everybody's saying that, you know, we're going to do all this horrible stuff with this, but we can't possibly know. Well, they either know or they don't know. They're either competent or they're incompetent. I think they're very competent at looking incompetent when they want to look incompetent. But believe me, you get on the wrong side of the government, and all of a sudden they start getting real competent real quick, you know? So I'm just not buying it.
It's the Clouseau strategy.
What's that?
Well,
it's the Jacques Clouseau strategy. They only appear incompetent, but they're actually very, very shrewd.
Exactly.
I was thinking of that Bill Murray. Remember that one he did? That movie? He was the underwater sea guy. Anyway.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. You know, it's almost like you can't put your fingers, you can't tie things together. It's all coming unraveled, but then you question, just like the Middle East, in this country, you go, is this the goal? Is this the goal? You know, we have never printed this much money. The Great Depression, you know, people talk about, you know, the difference between then and now is at least we had a gold standard. We ain't got crap, you know, and nobody's producing anything. We don't have the factories. We ain't going to get them back. They're all over the world. Our businesses and our corporations have moved everywhere else in the world because they're sick of America and they can make money, you know, by moving around the world. And the economies in the rest of the world are changing. And we're no longer the single big dog that we were in the, you know, in the Industrial Revolution or coming out of World War II after we bombed everybody's factories. So, you know, where's the recovery? Is there any? That's the question. You know, we're printing so much money, borrowing so much money, and you go, no sane human being would ever done what Bernanke did in our history. They've all done stupid things, but this is beyond the pale. You know, I say this all the time, and Rex corrects me all the time, but, you know, you just go to the store, everything's 20% higher. Nobody talks about it, you know, and it's just mind-boggling. Gas has never changed. We're still high. It's not going to reduce, you know. It's going to stay up there no matter what happens, and here we sit, and everybody's just sitting around numb, and they got all these scandals and things going on all over the world, and nobody can make hide nor tail of it. You know, it is kind of confusing some days, and unless you just want to pull back and look at it and going, damn, is this what they want it to be like? You know, I don't know.
It's an Overton window strategy. Overwhelm the system, crash it, and from the ash heap of the post-capitalist West, you know, the
proletariat will rise up and build a communist utopia, which is really nothing more than an oligarchy, because communism was never intended to be, quote, for the people. It is always about a few at the top who control everything, which is why it's financed by Western bankers as opposed to, you know, committed real communists. In any event,
because every time
the fact
governing systems collapse, utopias always arise. We know this from history.
Yeah. Oh, of course. It happened so many times, it's a wonder we're not in a utopia right now. But, yeah, all these scandals point to one thing and one thing only. The current administration is either sinister or incompetent or both. Either way, they are unfit for office, and they are hell-bent on destroying this country. And if you tell me, oh, they can't be that malicious, well, then their incompetency is doing it, and that's just as bad. Okay, they need to be held accountable, and you need a Congress that will do it. And you need a Congress that will actually hold them accountable to the law. This is a republic. No one is above the law. And what happens with rhino leadership like John Crying Tan, Orange Skin, Beef Jerky Boehner, Lindsey Lytton as Loafers Graham, John Stalmas McCain, and Marco, fake-ass conservative Tea Party guy Rubio, these guys talk big, but they don't press these scandals to any conclusion because they don't want to rock the power of Washington. They merely want to be the ones who wield it. You need people who are true, committed wacko birds. Someone like Ted Cruz who says, you know what the solution to this IRS scandal is? Abolish the IRS. Someone like Rand Paul who says, no, our country is not a theater of war. It's our home. You don't turn it into a friggin' combat zone. And the best way to do that is man a post. Contact your state legislatures. Understand that the militia is your enforcement mechanism. If you have a militia that is well regulated in your state, you will be able to provide for homeland defense against terrorists. You will be able to secure your border. You will be able to respond to natural disasters like these amazing tornadoes that are ripping through the Midwest right now. For anybody listening out there, stay safe and God bless you. You know, this is what it's about to be an American. It's your responsibility. Quit giving it away to the government because they will never fulfill their promises. They will either use you and buy your vote, and then they will put a boot on your neck. That's what these scandals are about. It's showing you how squishy the Republican leadership is. It's showing you that there are conservatives up there, and you need to support them. And then we got that great news from Matt. You heard about what happened at the Virginia convention, where we have a real conservative ticket that is going to dominate the Democrats in the Commonwealth of Virginia and turn this state back over to conservatism. That needs to happen in every state, because once the states are truly conservative and adhering to their state constitutions and the federal constitution, now you can truly nullify, you can truly set up the enforcement mechanism of the constitution, which is the well-regulated militia, and you can shrink D.C. back to what it is supposed to be. It has 18 enumerated powers, and that is it. So this is a great time to be excited. These scandals and all the chaos that's going on and the money printing, that is just showing you that these people are on their heels, that we outnumber them, and you have the power at your fingertips. Just stand up and use it and get others involved and get excited about it, because we can take this back to the way it's supposed to be according to the Constitution and move forward with being that shining city on the hill for the rest of the world, not invading the rest of the world, but being an example to them, an example of liberty and commerce and community and self-reliance. This is your country. There's 300 million Americans out of a planet of 7 billion people. Half of them are children, the infirm and the aged, and the other, you know, and half of the other half are apathetic, lazy, complacent people. So there's about 75 million of us. And we can make a huge difference. Get informed. Contact other like-minded people. Form local communities. Get busy. Don't let these scandals distract you. Take your country back. Keep an eye on these bastards. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
The flames of liberty will never die.